Night work teaches you how to exist in halves. The building emptied, the lights dimmed, and whatever rules people pretended to follow during the day loosened their grip. I learned quickly that the dark doesn't just hide mistakes, it invites them. I was a project coordinator then, assigned to the late shift after a restructuring that no one wanted to admit was a punishment. He was already there when I arrived, a familiar face from meetings who suddenly became something else when the clock tipped past 9. We told ourselves it was temporary. We told ourselves it was controlled. We told ourselves it was no one's business. Touch at night, distance in meetings. Two lives kept clean by the simple lie that no one was looking. We forgot that offices remember. We forgot that hallways watch. We forgot that someone is always awake, always bored, always willing to press a button on their phone. When the photograph appeared, it wasn't the image that broke us. It was the proof that the night had never been ours alone. I had been with the company for 4 years when the night shift became my new normal. It was framed as an opportunity, the kind of word managers use when they're moving you sideways. Our regional office in Budapest had taken on a foreign client that insisted on overnight coverage, and I was suddenly indispensable in a way that felt flattering and suspicious at the same time. I accepted because saying no felt like standing still while everyone else moved past me. I accepted because I had already learned that advancement rarely looks like promotion. Sometimes it looks like endurance. The office after dark was a different organism. The open floor plan softened. The hum of computers replaced the chatter. The air smelled faintly of cleaning chemicals and stale coffee. During the day, people performed professionalism like theater. At night, the performance dropped. You saw who stayed because they were needed and who stayed because they didn't know how to leave. He was part of the second group, though it took me a while to see it. He was a senior analyst, Hungarian like me, white, mid-30s, married but quiet about it. During meetings, he was careful, reserved, the kind of man who spoke only when he had something to say. At night, he loosened. He leaned back in his chair. He smiled more easily. He asked me questions that weren't about deadlines. We bonded over the small indignities of being awake while everyone else slept. We shared the same humor, dry and a little sharp. We shared the same resentment toward people who never had to badge in after sunset. At first, the boundaries were clear enough to pretend they were solid. We sat at opposite ends of the floor. We took breaks at different times. We spoke in low voices. But the quiet does things to you. It magnifies proximity. It turns glances into invitations. One night, the power flickered during a storm, plunging the office into a brief, collective darkness. When the lights came back, he was standing closer than before, and neither of us moved away. That was the moment, though I wouldn't name it then. I told myself it was the adrenaline. I told myself it was nothing. The warning signs were there in ways that felt almost considerate. The casual comments from security about who was still inside. The cleaning staff changing their routines to avoid us. The way my name started appearing on overnight reports more frequently than necessary. The way he lingered when he could have left. The way I noticed the sound of his footsteps before I noticed anything else. I understood power before others named it, but I was tired of understanding. I wanted the simplicity of being wanted without consequence. We never talked about what we were doing. There were no agreements, no rules spoken out loud. That silence felt safer than honesty. It allowed us to believe we were still in control. When he brushed my arm passing behind my chair, it felt accidental enough to deny. When we stood too close by the windows overlooking the empty street, it felt cinematic, like something that existed outside time. Daylight was for distance. Night was for proximity. We learned the choreography quickly. I knew he was married. I also knew how little that information mattered after midnight. I told myself I wasn't responsible for his choices. I told myself I wasn't asking for anything. I told myself I could leave at any time. Those were the lies that made the nights bearable. They were also the lies that made the days feel sharp and exposed. In meetings, we avoided eye contact. We sat on opposite sides of the table. Our voices stayed neutral. The effort of pretending was exhausting, but it also felt like proof that we were managing it. The first time we touched intentionally, it happened in a corridor camera blind spot I had noticed weeks earlier. The building had its quirks, and if you worked late enough, you learned them. His hand found mine, quick and sure, then gone. My heart raced like I had done something reckless, which I had. The warning signs were louder after that, but they sounded like excitement instead of danger. I ignored the part of myself that had learned what happens when workplaces turn personal. I wanted the night to be real in a way my career wasn't. Once the line was crossed, it didn't take much to erase it completely. The nights stretched longer. Our breaks aligned without discussion. We learned which conference rooms were rarely used after hours. We learned how to hear footsteps before they reached us. It wasn't sex in the way people imagine when they want to judge. It was hands, mouths, closeness, breath. It was enough to make the hours disappear and not enough to satisfy anything lasting. The darkness made it easy. The darkness made it feel earned. I told myself I was still professional because my work didn't suffer. In some ways, it improved. I stayed later. I responded faster. I volunteered for things I would have avoided before. Desire sharpened my focus. It also narrowed it. I stopped noticing the broader dynamics of the office. I stopped paying attention to how often my name came up in conversations that didn't include me. I didn't see how quickly a pattern becomes a story when other people are bored. He grew bolder, not careless, but confident. Confidence is more dangerous because it feels justified. He began to stand closer in meetings, just enough to test me. He sent messages during the day that were neutral on the surface and loaded underneath. I responded because not responding felt like rejection, and rejection felt like a threat to the fragile balance we had created. I was complicit in every step. I knew it, and I kept going. The office culture encouraged silence. HR existed as a function, not a presence. Complaints disappeared into systems that protected themselves. People learned to manage their own discomfort quietly. I had seen it before in other workplaces, the way inappropriate things survive because they are inconvenient to confront. That knowledge should have stopped me. Instead, it made me feel insulated. I believed I understood the terrain well enough to avoid the worst outcomes. The photograph was taken on a night when I was careless. We had stepped outside onto the loading dock for air, laughing too loudly, too close. I felt exposed for a moment, then dismissed it. The city was asleep. The street was empty. I forgot that phones see better than eyes in the dark. I forgot that someone might be watching from a car, from a window, from a place I couldn't imagine. The next morning, my phone buzzed with a message from an unknown number. I didn't open it until I was alone. It was us, blurry but unmistakable, his hand at my waist, my face turned toward him, the timestamp glowing like an accusation. There was no message attached, just the image. I felt my body react before my mind caught up, heat, then cold. The distance we maintained during the day suddenly felt useless. The night had followed us into daylight. He reacted differently. When I showed him, his face hardened. He spoke about risk and exposure and reputation in a way that made it clear where the weight would fall if things went wrong. I listened and nodded and felt something shift inside me. The intimacy we had built in darkness didn't survive contact with consequence. I realized then how uneven our stakes were, despite our shared nationality, our shared language, our shared exhaustion. His marriage would be a scandal. My position would be a lesson. The days after the photograph were tense and surreal. We avoided each other completely. The silence that had once protected us now isolated me. I waited for the fallout, for an email, for a meeting request. Nothing came, which was worse. The not knowing stretched my nerves thin. I started to see glances where there were none. I wondered who else had seen it. I wondered what version of the story they were telling themselves. When the meeting finally happened, it was brief and procedural. A reminder of conduct policies, a suggestion that schedules be adjusted, no accusations, no acknowledgement of the image. The system protected itself by pretending nothing had occurred. I was moved off the night shift within a week. It was framed as a rotation, another opportunity. He stayed. The message was clear without being spoken. The aftermath was quieter than I expected. There was no dramatic confrontation, no public reckoning. The damage was subtle, which made it harder to name. I felt watched, even when I wasn't. I questioned every interaction. The confidence I had gained during those nights evaporated under fluorescent lights. I did my job and did it well, but something had shifted in how I occupied space. He avoided me entirely. When we did cross paths, his eyes slid past me as if I were furniture. That hurt more than anger would have. It confirmed what I had suspected but refused to face. The night had been a convenience, not a commitment. I had been an accomplice to his escape, not a partner in anything enduring. I thought about the photograph often, not the image itself, but the act of taking it, the intention behind it. Someone had decided to intervene, to document, to hold a mirror up to something that wanted to stay hidden. I never found out who it was. In a way, that anonymity made it more powerful. It reminded me that workplaces are ecosystems, not stages. There is always an audience, even when you think you are alone. I didn't report anything. I didn't have language that felt accurate enough to use. It hadn't been coercion in the way policies describe. It hadn't been equal either. It existed in the gray space where responsibility blurs and systems thrive. Silence had a cost, and I paid it in small, daily ways. In the tightening of my chest before meetings, in the way I second-guessed my instincts, in the residue of shame that didn't belong entirely to me, but clung anyway. Eventually, I left that company, not because of him, not because of the photograph, but because I could feel the pattern forming again in other places. Night shifts, power, proximity. I recognized it now, without needing darkness to make it visible. I carried the lesson with me, not as a warning, but as a weight. The night shift affair didn't ruin my career. It didn't destroy his marriage, as far as I know. What it did was teach me how easily work can become a container for everything we don't have space for elsewhere. Desire, loneliness, ambition, fear. When work stops being just work, it doesn't announce itself. It slips in quietly, after hours, when the lights are low and the rules feel flexible. The photograph ended our two lives, but it didn't erase the truth of them. It just forced them into the same frame.